because we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're back, we're dads on the air.
And welcome this Tuesday, December 15, 2009, to another edition of Dads on the Air. It's a bright and sunny day in Sydney, and in the studio it's Bill Cable from Mediate Now, and with me is Ian Purdy.
Good morning, Bill, and I would just like to say that this morning is a very special edition of Dads on the Air. It's actually my father's birthday this morning. He's turning 85, so if you're listening, Dad, happy birthday.
Are we going to sing happy birthday?
I hadn't actually planned to. I don't think that's quite necessary. But anyway, the thought's there.
Anyway, happy birthday to Ian Purdy's dad and
Lloyd Purdy.
Ian Purdy's from ianpurdy.com. Now we've got a very busy show today. We've got an interview with Ken Thompson. Ken Thompson. You might have noticed in some stories in newspapers about him. He's the New South Wales Fire Brigade Deputy Commissioner. And Ken's 5-year-old son, Andrew, was abducted from Australia in 2008. And in response to his own difficulties in this area and with many other parents, Ken has set up a coalition of parents of abducted children. So we'll be talking to him about that. We then have an interview with Damien Dieck, who will be talking about a program he's running called Be That Confident Guy. It's a seminar he'll be running, so we'll be talking to Damien. Then we're going to be having a pre-recorded program, Hey Dad, I don't know too much about, but it sounds interesting. It's been set up for us by rock and pop Peter Vandervoord. And we will also be having special contributions from our guest in the studio, Jermaine Diarrhea. Now, before we get started with all that, Ian has a news story for us.
Well, I've actually got some good news here for a change. In this morning's Australian on the front page under the heading Welfare Clamp Boosts Health, Matthew Franklin has written, the Rudd government has received new evidence that the quarantining of welfare payments in Indigenous communities has significantly improved health, with children eating more and gaining weight as their parents' alcohol consumption fell. This is obviously very good news. Of parents in Indigenous communities subject to income management, 62.5% said their children were eating more, 57.4% said their children had gained weight, and 52.1% said their children were healthier. 75.3% said they were spending more on food. That's very, very significant. And 50% said they were buying more fruit and vegetables. So it seems that this particular initiative from the federal government is actually working and is having a positive outcome for children, which is a wonderful thing for Indigenous children. So we here at Dads on the Air applaud this particular initiative of the federal government, and they need to be doing more of this sort of thing to improve the health of Indigenous and indeed of all children, which is really our main concern here, is the welfare of children, I think. What do you think, Bill?
Well, you have to go along with that. And, it's nice to get a bit of good news. Sometimes our news stories are not such good news for parents and families.
Well, of course, there's all those terrible cases going on at the moment with children's being murdered by their mothers. There's the suitcase baby. I mean, no point going into all of that. These are broken lives, dysfunctional, horrible situations where, absolute catastrophes have happened. Now, it's good to be reading a positive news story with a positive outcome for children.
It is.
I think we should go to a song. We're waiting for our next guest, Ken Thompson, who will be on after the break.
Show your face.
Welcome back to Dad's on the Air. And our first guest, as mentioned a few minutes ago, is former New South Wales Fire Brigade Deputy Commissioner Ken Thompson. Ken, are you there?
Yes, I am, and I hope I'm not the former Deputy Commissioner. I think I am still the Deputy Commissioner.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you'd be so busy doing this work. But I wanted to talk to you today about the other side of what you're doing. You've set up a coalition of parents of abducted children. But look, just before we get on to that, I wonder if you could just clear up for me. So are you still in that position as Deputy Commissioner?
Yeah, I've taken some leave to concentrate my efforts on to locating my own son, Andrew, who, as you know, was abducted in April 2008. And I'm also using the time to set up this coalition so that we can help parents, not just in Australia, but around the world, actually, who are faced with this horrible experience. And they don't know where to go. They don't know who to talk to. They don't sort of have a common voice. It's a frightening experience when it happens. And I just felt that it was time to start bringing people together, people who are currently experiencing the abduction of their child and people who have gone through it before. So unfortunately pulling together quite a lot of experience.
Yes, it has a name, even if it's not a crime. It's IPCA, that stands for International Parental Child Abduction.
Yep, that's correct. It's not a crime in Australia at the moment unless parenting matters are already before the Family Court of Australia, which was the case with the abduction of my son, Andrew. Several countries now have introduced laws making IPCA a crime, and that's partly because the incidence of children being abducted internationally is increasing around the world. And there's also quite a large number of countries that have a very, very poor record of compliance with their obligations under the Hague Convention. Now, also, one of the problems that we face in Australia is that because it's not a crime, there's very, very little the authorities can actually do within Australia. The AFP won't carry out any kind of investigation that might help lead to the child being found in another country. The Australian Passport Office won't cancel passports. Telephone intercepts and so forth are virtually impossible to do unless a crime's been committed within Australia.
Incredibly frustrating. And you mentioned the Hague Convention. I think in some of these instances, the countries where the children have been abducted to aren't members of the Hague Convention.
Yeah, the Hague Convention doesn't apply to every country in the world. Australia, New Zealand, US, Canada, most of the European Union, the UK are all signatories to the Hague Convention. But virtually no Middle Eastern countries are signatories, other than Egypt, that has a separate arrangement with Australia for the return of children. I don't think any countries in Asia are signatories to the Hague Convention. And that makes it, very, very difficult. The former Eastern Bloc, a lot of those countries, unless they're part of the EU, are not signatories. Now, in those cases where children are abducted from Australia to those countries, there's absolutely no support that those parents who are left behind will get from the Australian government, because the Australian government has set up a department within the Attorney General's department called the Central Authority. And its sole purpose is to facilitate the return of children through the Hague Convention. So if they're taken to a non-Hague country, the parents are virtually left on their own.
And perhaps even more frustrating when you have a country such as Poland, which is a member of the Hague Convention, as far as I'm aware, but there's been a recent case there where the child of Demetrius...
Laskos.
And his child, Panagiotis, is it?
Panagiotis Laskos, yes.
Yes, and there is the facility for returning a child in a situation, he went right to the High Court of Poland and couldn't get any support for the child being returned, I believe.
Yeah, it's a very sad case, this one, and it's an example of the non-compliance that I was talking about before with Hague Convention countries. The Hague Convention is a very, very simple document. It's very black and white. And unfortunately, a lot of courts either don't understand the intent of the Hague Convention, or they simply choose to ignore their obligations. And this tends to happen more frequently than when a national of that particular country abducts a child to that country, even though the child is an Australian citizen. What I've noticed over the sort of 18 months that I've been involved with these sorts of cases is that if you're a national of that country, there seems to be a very strong bias towards the abducting parent. Now, in the case of Panagiotis, he was abducted in 2007 when he was 11 months old. He was abducted to Poland. His father, Dimitrios, immediately lodged an application for him to be returned under the provisions of the Hague Convention. There was also a court-ordered psychiatric assessment that was carried out in Poland that said the child should be returned to Australia as soon as possible. The case was first heard at a local court, and the court ruled that the child should not be returned to Australia because the mother didn't want to come back. Now, that's not a legitimate reason under the Hague Convention.
I think that's something you'd expect, wouldn't you? She's abducted the child to Poland.
Yeah, there's only three grounds on which a country can refuse to return a child, and that's certainly not one of them. So he then took his case to the High Court, and he was very, very confident that the child would be returned. Three judges sitting in judgment on his application, and they ruled, he only found out last week, that the court has refused to return his son to Australia because the child doesn't speak English and the child doesn't know his father.
Again, exactly what you'd expect.
Exactly. I mean, 2 years. It took 2 years for the case to work its way through the legal system in Poland, and that's another contravention of their legal obligations under the Hague Convention. They're meant to be heard very, very quickly. It took 13 months for the decision to be handed down from the first case before he was able to take his case to the High Court. So, you know, we're now working with him, and we're making representation to the Australian government to make representation to the Polish government to see if this decision can be overturned or at least reviewed.
Yes, I think, well, that's a very important point. When a child is as young as that, 11 months, it's even more important that action is taken quickly because, you know, each day that goes past, he's being further alienated from the father, isn't he?
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons for the Hague Convention. It's one of the requirements under the Hague Convention. But the Hague Convention was drawn up about 30 years ago, and we don't believe that it's really kept pace with changes that have taken place around the world. And, you know, it probably needs a significant review as well because it's just not working as well as it was originally intended to.
Another thing I've noticed in the figures, which is quite surprising, is that currently of the abductions, I think the figure is about 70% is by mothers and about 30% by fathers.
Well, there are some new figures out now that show that the rate of abductions by mothers is 89%.
89%.
Now, remember, when the Hague Convention was introduced 30 years ago, it was introduced because 70% of abductions were carried out by fathers.
Isn't that strange? Why do you think it switched around in that way?
I think within Australia, Australia is a very multicultural society. There are lots of relationships and marriages where people come together from different cultures. Sometimes those marriages don't work for cultural reasons. I think generally the mothers want to return to the country that their family is in and the country they've come from. I think sometimes they don't feel as though the Australian legal system is sympathetic, or perhaps they don't understand the Australian legal system. There's also the tyranny of distance between Australia and a lot of these countries, and I think a lot of parents, but particularly the mothers, tend to want to go back to where they came from, where they feel supported. But there's also, you know, the view that quite a lot of people do this because they know that the Australian legal system is quite fair and will look at the case and will sometimes hand down decisions that, you know, the abducting parent doesn't want. And I think the Polish case is a very good example of that. You know, the mother's gone back to Poland because she feels that she'll get a much better hearing in Poland than she would in Australia. Australia's actually got a very good rate of returning children who've been abducted to Australia.
Well, that's positive. There is the option of getting a child on the watch list through the Australian Federal Police after you've made an application, but I guess you need to be wary that something's going to happen before you make that application, don't you?
Yeah, look, a lot of these cases take place before parenting matters are taken before the family court. A lot of these abductions take place with little or no warning. Dimitrios had no idea that his child was going to be taken to Poland and not be returned. His wife had taken Panagiotis to Poland about 3 months before, and she'd returned. She wanted to go back because her grandmother was quite ill, I believe. Dimitrios had no reason to believe his wife wasn't going to return, but she didn't.
Yes, that's sometimes, or oftentimes, I guess, is the reason given, that it's for family reasons, there's a special function or whatever, and the agreement is given, but not expecting that it's the last time you'll see the child.
Yeah, look, sometimes parents who abduct children might do an overseas trip a few months before doing the actual abduction. And, you know, I think it might be a way of, you know, testing the waters and finding out what sort of support they might have at home, creating some confidence in the other parent that they will return. So when they do the next trip, the parent isn't suspicious and they simply don't return. I've heard of probably half a dozen cases in Australia where that's been the case.
Ken, I wonder, would you mind, I know you're conducting an international campaign to try and find Andrew, would you mind just telling us a little bit about what happened in your own situation?
Yeah, my matter was before the family court. In December 2007, my wife, Melinda, just started behaving very, very strangely. She was trying to deny me any contact with Andrew whatsoever. In January, she went to visit her brother with Andrew and she didn't return. A month later, she wrote a letter saying that the marriage was over. She had no intention of any form of reconciliation, and she accused me of abusing Andrew. I can't go into too much detail about the nature of those allegations. I then had to commence legal action through the family court to re-establish relationship with Andrew and to have Melinda's allegations investigated thoroughly. The court ordered an independent expert witness report, a psychiatrist report. That psychiatrist found that there was absolutely no basis to Melinda's allegations and that he believed she was suffering from a paranoid mental state. She received the psychiatrist's report and 2 days later she left the country with Andrew. They flew to Singapore, then on to Frankfurt, and they've disappeared from Frankfurt. And we've had a very, very large campaign going around the world. And so far, we haven't been able to get any information at all. There are Interpol alerts in 200 countries. The Australian government's been very good. They have been making inquiries in lots of other countries. And we've got a major campaign running through the internet. But so far, I haven't been able to pick up any leads on where they might be.
We're speaking with New South Wales Fire Brigade Deputy Commissioner Ken Thompson. And Ken, we have an international audience through Dad's on the Air, so we can only add our support to your campaign to try and find Andrew and wish you all the very best.
That's great. If people would like to take part in the campaign, they can contact me through a website for Andrew, which is www.findandrew.com.
Thank you, or you can, and feel free, anyone that wants to contact the Dad's on the Air site, www.dadsontheair.net, and we can also pass a message on to Ken. So, just finally, Ken, you've mentioned, I think you're taking action also through the Family Law Reform Association?
Yeah, the Family Law Reform Association and COFAC are working very, very closely together on this issue. The Family Law Reform Association's also very alarmed at the number of children being abducted from Australia. The official government figure is about 150 a year, but that only includes children who are abducted to Hague Convention countries, and everyone believes that the real figure is probably, you know, at least twice that number. So we're talking around, you know, about one child a day being kidnapped out of Australia. And in 2009, that's just unbelievable, extraordinary that kind of thing can still be happening. So the Family Law Reform Association has written to the Attorney-General explaining its concerns and highlighting the fact that the lack of legislation could well be a contributing factor to those numbers within Australia. And they've asked the Attorney-General for an urgent meeting to discuss their concerns and to work with the Attorney-General to find a way that some legislation, either some new legislation can be introduced that will make this a crime, or at the very least, amend existing legislation to enable things to be done within Australia that simply can't be done at the moment. And we're still waiting to hear back from the Attorney-General. The Family Law Reform Association wrote about probably 6 weeks ago now.
Well, we can only wish you success in that campaign and more particularly success in finding Andrew.
Yeah, thank you very much for that, and thanks for all your help over the last 12 months and helping me get the message about Andrew out through your program, and now getting the message about COPAC and the other poor kids who find themselves in this situation without any real voice.
Thank you, Ken. We've been speaking to Ken Thompson, and we've got the website, or you can come to the Dad on the Air website to find out more or find out how you can assist in this very important work. Thanks again, Ken.
Thank you very much. Bye.
In distress, meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
Welcome back to Dads on the Air. This is Bill Cable, and in the studio with me I have Ian Purdy, and we have a special guest who will be making contributions from time to time, but online, we have Damien Deaker. Are you there, Damien?
Yes, I am. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Damien, I understand you'll be running a seminar.
Yes, I certainly will. The seminar is called Be That Confident Guy, and that will be on December the 19th. It's a Saturday, from 6:30 until 9:30 p.m.
Where will that be held, Damien?
That will be at the YWCA, that's the Young Women's Christian Association Hotel. It's located in Sydney, 5 to 11 Wentworth Avenue. It's near Museum or Town Hall Station.
And what led you to set up this seminar, Damien?
Well, essentially it started for me many years ago. I came out of a very long relationship, and very shortly afterwards I developed an acute anxiety disorder. I'm sure many of listeners have experienced before, when you come out of a particularly bad relationship, and it can lead you into a very low self-esteem. And I was actually trapped in my room for a while. So as I got out of that situation myself, I started helping other people in similar situations, so other men who had come out of relationships, who had suffered incredibly low self-esteems, build their self-confidence again and build confidence for them talking to women and getting out there in the dating scene again.
You get a bit rusty, can't you?
You do, you really. Especially when your self-esteem is low, and I think there are very few things that can be harder at that point.
And the technology has been described as neuro-linguistic programming, NLP. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what your background is with that programming?
Okay. Very simply, it looks at the words that you use when you talk to yourself. So the ways that you respond to events that occur in your life, and how you explain those events to yourself. So we can all explain the same event in two separate ways. One look from a woman to one man could mean that she isn't interested in him at all, and another man may interpret that same look as she's interested in me, but she's too shy to show that, as an example.
And so it's all happening inside the man, actually, as to, like, it's a perception of what the outside world is telling him.
Very much so. You know, it is very much a matter of different people have vastly different interpretations of the world, and those interpretations can have a very real impact on how you interact with the world around you.
Yes, and I noticed the condition is called learned helplessness.
Yes.
I've heard many wives talking about husbands in that sense, that there's a learned helplessness when it comes time to doing some handyman work. Is it anything similar to that?
I think that's a choice, that kind of helplessness at times. Look, learned helplessness is a term that was coined by a gentleman named Martin Seligman.
Yes, I was going to ask you. I know I've got his book at home, actually, called Learned Optimism. Is
yes,
it?
Exactly.
Hmm.
And learned helplessness is really the other side of that coin, which is where a situation where events in your life lead you to believe that you have little to no control over what's occurring around you. And what Martin Seligman found was that when humans or animals, for that matter, had been taught by events that had occurred in their lives, that they had very little control, that depression and loss of confidence followed very quickly.
Yes, and you've had years of coaching experience, I understand.
Yes. Look, I've been running School of Attraction for 2 years now, but before that we were running a self-confidence program called Interaction, which again taught men self-confidence, but this was a charitable program, so we raised money for children in Africa through coaching in this program. And before that, of course, I do have a history of teaching public speaking as well.
Yes, perhaps you could just tell us a little bit more about the program at the seminar.
Yes, certainly. So, look, the program is, it's essentially a module taken, because I run courses as well, I run 4 and 8 week courses separately. It's a module taken out of these courses that I run, and it represents the backbone of what I teach, and it does stand alone by itself. So men can expect to come in, and what I'm going to do is explore with them a little bit about the nature of what true self-confidence is, and what some tools are that they can use, what some actions are that they can take straight away that will begin to have a very positive impact on their self-confidence from that point forwards. So men walking away then will know what they can do straight away the next day when they next go out what they can do that will help them to increase their self-confidence.
Yeah, that's very important. You'll provide them with the tools so that when they get into a bad situation, they'll know where to go from there.
Exactly. Well, yes, exactly. Using that, as I said, looking at the concept of learned helplessness and how to reverse that so that men will feel like they have complete control over their ability to build their self-confidence. I know that many men feel, how am I going to get out of this rut? Or many men often feel that, look, I'm just an unconfident kind of guy, and that really doesn't need to be the case.
We're speaking with Damien Deeker, who's running a seminar called Be That Confident Guy. That will be in Sydney on December 19th. Runs from 6:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m.
Yep, that's correct.
And it's being held at the YWCA Hotel, 5 to 11 Wentworth Avenue, Sydney, which is 10 minutes walk from Museum or Town Hall Station.
Yes, that is it.
And could you tell us the cost for the seminar?
Certainly. Now, men can either pay at the door, and that's $35. Now, if they do come with a friend, if they want to bring somebody with them, then two people can come in together and only pay $25 each. Mm-hmm. As I said, they can pay on the door, or if they do wish to have a look at the website, am I allowed to give that online here?
Absolutely.
So the website there is www.schoolofattraction, that's one word, .com.au. And they can sign up there. They can also find out a little bit more about myself and my background, as well as School of Attraction and what we hope to achieve.
And they can call you, Damien, can they?
Yes, they certainly can. I'll give you my number. It's 0403-032-839. And they're welcome to call and ask me any questions with regards to the course or the company or myself if they wish to find out some more.
Well, it sounds a very worthwhile objective, and in the future they'll be able to perhaps deal with rejection, they'll be able to approach anxiety, they'll be able to deal with all those things with the tools you'll be providing.
Yeah, look, it really can have a huge impact on all those areas, absolutely.
And Damien, is it open for, say, female partners to come with the men as well?
Yes, it is. We already do have a group of women coming. And they're essentially there because they're very interested as well in the type of coaching that I offer. I know some women have actually come along because they know men who at this point are a little bit too shy to come along. It can be a very sensitive area for men as well. So I actually have a couple of women who are coming as a proxy, essentially, to find out what it's all about.
Oh, that's good. I agree with you. I think if we can get that encouragement, sometimes it's the women that drive the men to actually do something about these areas, isn't it?
It can be very much so.
So we've been speaking with Damien Deeker. Damien, thank you very much for coming on the air. And
Not a problem.
We can wish you all the best for your seminar, which is on December 19. I wonder if you could just give us the website again.
Sure. That's www.schoolofattraction.com.au.
And that's for the big seminar called Be That Confident Guy. So once again, thanks, Damien, and all the very best for your seminar and for your future courses.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, and have a great Christmas.
Thank you. Same to you.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
When I come home, baby, and I've been working all night long, I put my daughter on my knee, and she said, "Daddy, what's wrong?" She whispered in my ear so sweet. You know what she said? She said, town. But I go see her sometime. We
make love so fast. I put my head on her shoulder. She said, tell me all the trouble. You know what she said? She said,
in distress, meeting your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437, or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
We were fortunate enough to record a number of interviews, presentations and workshops at the National Men's Health Conference held in Newcastle recently. One of those was by Greg Stock, who ran an excellent workshop on the Hey Dad programs for the facilitators dealing with the importance of restoring a dad's role in our society, especially in the Indigenous community, and for the great need to bring our dads back into the lives of our children in all of our communities, whether black, white or brindle. This workshop gives us all an idea of how dads are dealing with this all-important issue. So let's have a listen to part one of Hey Dads.
Thanks for dropping in. A couple of minutes ago, I didn't think anyone was going to be here. And I was looking forward to that as well. As Craig kindly introduced, my name's Greg Stock, and I work with Centrecare Broken Bay, based in the northern part of Sydney. And along with Centrecare Broken Bay, I'm a project worker there in men's services, men and family relationships. And one of the cornerstones of Centrecare Broken Bay's men and family relationships has been the Hey Dad program. Who's heard of Hey Dad? Who's heard of Hey Dad for Indigenous Dads Up to Pops? Hey Dad, the original Hey Dad, which I call the Falcon or the Commodore, was launched in about 1996 in the northern area of Sydney. And it was launched purely because there was a need. There was plenty of parenting programs out there. There was plenty of services for women. There was even parenting for women, for mums. But there was nothing for dads, males, fathers. So Centrecare, over the years, have come up with Hey Dad, which is a parenting program specifically for fathers. We're not discounting mothering. We're not discounting fathering. It's just that we needed something for men. From that, a couple of years later, we developed Hey Dad for separated fathers. And that changed the program a little bit. We spent a lot of time in the separated one on parenting and fathering when you're not with your children, living with them 4 days a week, 7 days a fortnight, 2 days a fortnight, whichever way it is, and also on loss and grief. In the Hey Dad, the original Hey Dad, there wasn't anything on loss and grief. In the separated fathers, there was quite a lot on loss and grief. And it's interesting, when you start these separated men's groups at times, they don't even realise that they are suffering from a loss and therefore reacting in grief. Then we developed some handouts for the cold community as well. The program started to expand into different cultures and different communities. And about 2006, I think, about 2005, 2006, Centrecare was approached because they believed there was a need in the Indigenous cultures for a Hey Dad type program. A program which celebrated not just fathering and being a dad, but also celebrated the cultural side of that. You can notice the name's different. Hey Dad for Indigenous Dads, Uncles and Pops. By its very name, it has widened that family definition of who takes the fathering role. In more Western cultures, that's quite linear. In more Indigenous cultures in many places around the world, not just here, that fathering line, the mothering line, the parenting line is not just linear. It goes across to uncles and cousins, pops. So we developed something completely different. I now call this the Fairmont Gia, or the Holden Calais. It's finally been developed. We could probably go a step further, but then we probably won't need me if we do that, so there you go. Hey Dad for Indigenous and Pops, DVD, photo language, and a CD-ROM, everything in there. So as a presenter or a facilitator, you've got it all there. But as this being a workshop, I'm not going to do all the work today, so I'm going to ask you some questions as well. The title of this workshop is Helping Indigenous Men to Increase Their Capacity in Community. Any idea what that means? Me as a workshop presenter should know that. Well, what do we mean by increasing capacity? What are we trying to do? Any ideas? Mr. McMinn?
Yeah, there you go. Increase the capacity would be to, in my mind anyway, it's to train up more workers in individual communities to present the Hey Dad program and other programs that are going on.
Mm.
And I always felt Centrecare was in the box seat because they've got workers in every state. And if we go into the prisons like you're doing,
mm-hmm.
things like that, get them out into their own communities and developing all these sorts of programs for their communities.
A community needs every part of it working well to reach its capacity. If we've got one part of that community, one of the largest parts of the community, men not reaching their capacity for whatever reason, we're not going to have that community functioning at full level. When we talk about men and men's health and parenting, we often say parenting is a team sport. And when we do our Hey Dads for Indigenous, we use a lot of metaphors, we use a lot of sporting metaphors, cars, fishing metaphors, whatever it takes to speak the language of the people that we're sitting with. But if we can't build up one important part of that community, how can the whole can be healthy? Whether that community is a remote community, whether it be an urban or a regional community, there are gaps that need to be filled and strengthened. And if one major, major, major part is not functioning, how is the community going to handle it? it means other people, unfortunately, have to take and step up. Who usually steps up in our communities at the moment?
Women.
Why?
Past the injustices on me. Shame. The socialised element to it. So women are expected to do that as well.
Yeah.
What has been expected of them?
It's been a very complicated story. Some may say, as I talk about here, we're going to look at loss and grief in a minute. We're actually going to make us get down and do some of this about what we do in the program. But Ray was right. When we did the Hey Dad rollout around the country over in May, June, July, I've just got back, I think, after 3 or 4 months on the road, the idea, we were funded by Faxia to go out there and train the trainer. We were going out to communities and we were training the people in those communities to take the program back to their communities and then train up other local people. Now, the people who came along to our training were from NGOs, from health, from all sorts of different organisations. They are going to take that back to their community and train up other people. More than likely what's going to happen, because Faxia wanted it to happen that way, is that those people won't go back and train other people. They'll be staying here and they'll be running themselves or they'll be flying the flag. It's just the way it is, the type of people who come along to these trainings. I don't want to give too much history of what we've done. I actually want to talk about how the training went and why it does so much for the community. I gather most of the people here would be working for some sort of public organisation. Maybe a few people here, the odd private practice or something like that as well. Most people here would be working for an NGO, a health organisation, a family support service, something like that. So we were training exactly the same people, and also the demographic mix I've got in this room is pretty similar to what we were training around the country as well. So we treated our training groups as really a working group as well. So actually we're treating them, so we had some guidelines, for example. We spent the first part of the morning working with men.
Can I just ask, was it mainly men you were training, or some women, or what was
I'll get to that in a second, thanks. You know where I'm heading. Working with men, strength-based exercise, what is a facilitator and what is adult education? We looked at some basics and the manual of the program content. Everyone we trained was hungry to get into this. Oh, let's open up and have a look. We don't hand it out straight away. We'll let them be hungry for it for a while. But what happens in day two is that we get stuck into, we actually break you up into groups of four and we say, okay, tomorrow you've got section one on loss and grief, and we'd like you to act as if you're going to be running a group tomorrow on loss and grief. And you only have to do it for half an hour, 45 minutes. It's all in the manual. Off you go. So what we do is they'd learn it. You know, they think it was fantastic. What was in there is really good, the content. But then they have to come back and present it. And that really is interesting because we did have a lot of women coming along to the training. But why do we have so many women coming along to the training? And also in the training in particular areas, there was more women. In regional Victoria, we had more women come to the Mildura training than we did for other areas around.
When we ran the Thai Inclusive in Victoria, 55 participants, 27 women.
It's a fact if we're in this industry. You know, I've turned up to meetings with 100 women and 2 men, or workshops. So the question about women, is there a specific question about why they were there or who they were? Or
no, I was just interested because I guess my inference was, is the program better or different if it's run, if the facilitator's a man who the new dads can maybe identify with than if it's a woman, or does it not matter? I guess that was maybe what I was leading.
It's a really good question. It's something I've probably only just figured out in the last couple of months in my own comfort level about it. Originally, when Hey Dad for Indigenous Dads, Uncles and Pops was put out, it was meant to be ran by Indigenous men to train other Indigenous men, to train Indigenous men to run the program back in their community.
that's okay, because these men are in their community, but it's this gap that's filled by people such as us who come into presentations as this and do workshops. And I'm surprised, I don't know, can anyone see a lady in the opening today?
Yeah.
Yes.
Were a few?
Yeah.
Okay. It's the only time I've seen that imbalance when you come to something like this. Mm-hmm. But I expected maybe one here only because I'm used to seeing so many women rock up to the training. So, in a way, Ray, you were originally organising or helping the developments in the steering committee about the question of women being involved in this. And originally it was by men, for men, two men, for men, wasn't it?
Yeah. And that's why it should be.
Mm. But if we leave it that way, what's going to happen?
Probably won't get done to a certain degree.
When we are running an actual Hey Dad men's group, Hey Dad, every Tuesday night or over two Saturdays, yes, in all intents and purposes and hope that two men run that. But if you're in jail, say Lithgow, where we've been out there in a correctional centre out there, and the welfare officers are women, it don't get run otherwise, does it?
No.
But with all intents and purposes, this last one down here should be run by men. Women in the organisational here, we're doing the training, what we're doing now in a way, are organising it. They're the community leaders in a way. They're the pushers and the shovers. So that's the involvement of women.
I think your friend over here, brother over here, you know, he hit the nail on the head. You know, we were hunters and gatherers, and that's what's happened. We've lost that identity, the self-esteem and everything. Women, rightly so at the moment, they're putting their hands up for everything, which is great. But look, we really need, as Aboriginal men, to start taking our rightful position back in our society. In our society.
Sorry.
Explain to me the rightful position.
As leaders of their community and their clans. I think it's the only way, you know, we're going to make our way back into the light, if you like.
Yeah.
I've seen it happen. I've seen it working.
What my grandmother told me is that the women being placed into the roles of leadership by default, you know, started back in the early days of colonisation, when our men were made to feel worthless and feel like they weren't needed around the families anymore, or part of the families. Yeah, so our women were, I speak from what my grandmother told me, were pushed into the default roles of leadership, and that, of course, was passed on from generation to generation now, which has been about two or three. So for two or three generations, we've been holding our women up there to be our backbone, and that's right across the country. Now, that it's through colonisation and the effects of colonisation that really hold us now as men and where we sit in society. That's what my grandmother shared with me.
So you answered that question from before when I asked about capacity. And loss and grief in the Indigenous Hey Dad package is an enormous topic. And I know when they had a closed group out of Lithgow Correctional Centre, the actual group itself met every Wednesday morning with two female Aboriginal welfare officers, started off with 12 men, and they ran for probably 6 months because they could. But they spent 3 months on loss and grief. Now, the thing with Hey Dad is that I don't know if we're reinventing the wheel here. We're definitely not reinventing the wheel. Loss and grief has been around since we had a thinking mind to lose things. But how hung up do we get on doing something on loss and grief in a Hey Dad session which goes for 3 hours in a morning or is one part of a whole parenting skill program?
You're listening to Greg Stock, facilitating part one of the Hey Dad workshop. So don't go away. We'll be back after the short break.
When I was small, you took me by one day I'd say you were right.
Back with part one of the Hey Dad workshop, facilitated by Greg Stock.
To get back to your thing about time, and one of the first exercises we do when we're running a Hey Dad program is to, or even when we're doing a facilitator training, which I've done a lot of, is we look at the changing roles of Aboriginal dads down the ages. And we break them up into groups, and we put the men into groups, and we did this out of Wilcannia. Put the men into groups and ask them, what were dad's roles, responsibilities and family involvement pre-white man? And they come up with what their roles were traditionally. And that changes from one side of this large land to another, to a certain degree, but not very much. Very traditional roles, and they love writing them down. And they have real fun with it. But we come through with a very set thing. Then we look at the 1950s. What were Aboriginal males' role models or roles as dads and fathers back in the 1950s? What happened? We might be talking mid-last century. What roles were there? What role models were there? We've got another group working on that while someone's working on that. And then we've got them to ask about now. You spend days on that. And they did a bit go. That gets them thinking. Hey, how do we link these roles to now? Because the loss and grief of this time. And if we're going around training up other facilitators, professionals such as yourselves or leaders in your communities, if we do exercises when we're training from the actual manual, things on loss and grief, us as professionals are learning all the time. And what goes on in these rooms when we talk about loss and grief is fantastic. But the important thing to remember about Hey Dad is it is specifically about parenting and fathering. It's not therapy. Every good work that we do, if it's an education session, will have a certain amount of psychotherapeutic help that goes with it. If it's a good enough program, it just will. But I'll tell you, when we run it for professionals and we do some of the programs, a lot of professionals get so much out of it. really do. Just going through the two-day training, they felt like they've been through a Hey Dad course as well. Any questions on that before I move on?
You're talking about taking people through a process in 2 days. Is that the Tony Trailers program?
Yes.
Do you think in a two-day program, I'm fairly sure I'll be able to this, but you can actually get to levels of competence and confidence?
No. No way.
That are going to lead people to be able to take the final step?
No, and that's the problem. I was speaking on that this afternoon.
Right.
About lessons learned from our rollout. But there's always been a stick in that craw. Are we making these people that I'm training ready to take it back to their men? Yes and no, in a way. 2 days is never enough. 2 days is too long. How do we get them there? How do we keep them there from their busy jobs to come to 2 days training? When all the hoopla of leaving here, leaving this room and everything, yahoo, we love you, brother, let's get out of here, take it back to community, day-to-day life comes in. It just happens. Shit happens. So are we making them ready? We're giving them some tools, but as far as their skills and whether they're actually ready to present it, you know, some people are, some people aren't. Some people are more confident. Some people aren't presenters. Some people want to drive it from the office back at, you know, in the community. I want to make these men do it. It may be a woman who drives it. It probably will be.
Mm-hmm.
Because she wants... I remember we were up training in Casino in Lismore in the Tabalum area. And we just walked into a preschool there, and this beautiful indigenous woman just said, "We want our men back." And part of getting our men back is getting them out of the correctional centres, giving them a role again. The role that was here, taken away, given away, pushed away, back to now. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah.
But how do we make these men in the communities believe their capacity is increasing? They say women are natural mothers. I believe men are natural fathers. Wherever you come from, as you say, black, white or brindle. Meaning. Perfect.
Yeah.
It's one of the things we've all got in common is that we're dads.
I've got 9 on them. Should have been locked up in a rubber room.
I don't think
I was
going to
see you this week.
Greg, can I just ask you one?
Sure.
Just one in
Pipe
the
up whenever you want.
In the 1950s era, what are some of the, I suppose, some of the answers, or one, maybe one of the answers that they came up to deal with the loss and grief?
They weren't looking for answers here.
Oh.
And we're probably they were only trying to state what they saw as historical, what was happening to them there.
Oh, okay.
What was that like there? God, if we're looking for answers, we could be training for 3 weeks or we could be running a program for years. We may never find the answer. But just for some of these guys to use this, I mean, well, Kenny, some of the men, once they saw this, it made them stand up.
Mm-hmm.
And it made them talk. And it made them yarn about things which they'd never spoken about before in their community. Maybe because they weren't from that community.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it wasn't their country, but they'd never really spoken up before when they were respected and they had the years on them. But once this started to come out, these men started to talk.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the younger blokes come and say, "Greg, brother, you know, I've never seen those old blokes talk before. And all we're talking about is being a dad."
Mm-hmm.
"We're not talking about politics. We're not talking about anything else like that. We're just talking about being a dad." And it was that simple. And if you bring it back to that, that's what works. A Hey Dad for Indigenous dads, uncles and pops is not a program to try and solve the problems of the world, to try and find answers to why things happened and why things didn't happen. And we talk about two-day training. The program itself, the actual Hey Dad program, I reckon you need 12, 14 hours to do it justice. How you do that really depends on your community. A lot of places we've learned, don't hold them on weeks, hold them on off weeks. And other places have said, no, do it the other way because there's less money. Yeah, it's confusing. You've got to know your own community.
Mm.
When's the best time? You can hold on 2 Saturdays. You can hold on 6 Tuesday nights. So, yeah, when we get a lot of professionals together, we do it straight over 2 days. When we get men from the community, we might find that most of those guys have Wednesday nights free. Or in summer, it's not footy practice anymore. Another reason to get together. Any more questions?
I don't know if I'm jumping the gun in your content. I'm sure it's not in your training package, but in the conversations you're having, perhaps in your train-the-trainer sessions, well, obviously one of the ways loss and grief can manifest is through violence and self-harm.
Mm-hmm.
So does that come up in your package? I'm sure it comes up in conversation.
It's going to come up right now.
Yeah. Good work.
Thanks for reading the notes I gave you beforehand. Anything else? So you know where we stand in this now? I'm the person who represents Centrecare. We've been training facilitators around the country to train up other people in their communities to run a Hey Dad program for six or seven dads on a Tuesday evening. So now we're the process we are here now.
Mm-hmm.
And you people may be people who want to present a program, or you may want to take it back and give the idea to your management and push it and say, hey, this can work. We've also found now, I think this program is now about two and a half, three years old, that we take it around the country. It was designed over here in the east. You can take it anywhere. You've just got to change a few of the words. Yarning's not yarning over the west.
No.
No. For example, you know, we took the whole project, we changed some words in it, but it was done over here in the east too. And one thing I have learned after doing this travelling, it's a bloody big country. And there's bloody a lot of countries out there in that big bloody country too. Okay. Any other questions? One of the things we do in training is this thing called Calico Man. People often thought it was Calico Man. It's not Calico Man, it's Calico Man, only for the fact that what the hell's calico? It's that bit of material. I need two volunteers. Ray, you won't have to.
I'm going to get up.
Are you well, that's thank you for reminding me. If we didn't have a laugh when we're doing things as trainers or as professionals or as men in our groups and our families, we wouldn't be men, would we? You gotta have a laugh?
Too right.
Yeah. Thanks, Ray. Keep it up, mate. I'll give you $5.
Yeah. It's only human quality, actually.
I don't know if it's genuine, but I think laughing is good.
Yeah. I think it is in groups sometimes. I think we can get. Men get really stupid.
Well, it breaks tension sometimes.
It does break tension.
I agree, but I don't think being human.
You are standing there.
Yeah.
All good, mate.
I think it's a genius.
We just do it better.
Yeah. I think we do it better. We do it. I often think men stay boys and children for a lot longer than women do, so we have sort of a boy's sense of humour for a lot longer. And maybe that changes about 50. I don't know when life's responsibilities. Yeah. Now, can you lay down, sir? That was easy, wasn't it?
Open material.
Which, yes, please. It's only a bit of material, stuff there. Now, I need a drawer. Okay. I need your head up here.
Up here?
Up here.
No, I'll do it. I'll draw it. Actually, no. You can have someone trace it while I do the chatting.
Yeah, I'll draw it.
There you go.
Don't draw on my clothes, bro.
Yeah. Hey, look, I'll make it twice the size you are. Oh, I got
the No, we're not sure again.
I always like this bit.
Yeah. I'm going to draw it.
Take your time, mate. Do it well.
Yeah.
Me no. There's enough going.
I'm just going to say I think he's going to draw the pile in the middle.
Why has he got that bit of a trophy?
That's right. A 10-pair.
I think that name's what we are.
We're the Michelin Man. I look at it.
And you're one of the smaller blokes.
Yeah.
You just didn't want to get too close to the clothes, all right?
Generous. I'm just a generous guy.
When we talk about loss and grief in a Hey Dad group, a weekly group, say, we talk about loss and grief, but we do it in different ways. We may just hand out something to the men. And again, when we're running programs, we don't assume literacy levels. A lot of the handouts were changed to more picture-based, but that dragged it down to a level. But, you know, literacy hasn't been a big issue for a lot of the people I've been training so far, but they're professionals, so literacy is a thing. But with loss and grief, we actually just yarn about it. This we brought out for a training. Just to give an idea, we started out a strength-based practice. We're talking about working with men, a strength-based, non-deficit approach. We use this as a strength-based practice. Then I start to use it for loss and grief. The next thing I know, I've got trainee facilitators in Adelaide saying, no, Mildura saying, why can't I use this with my men? And I said, probably no reason why not. It's not in the manual. It's not one of the activities in the manual. But that's the beauty of the Hey Dad program. There's so much in there that you can adapt it. But if it doesn't quite fit for your community and the way you're doing things, change it. It's not there to talk about and answer all their issues on loss and grief. And the loss and grief can be how many loss in the Indigenous community, how far is loss and grief? How big is it? But it's not just one type of loss and grief, is it? How many have we got? We've got the stolen generations. We've got land. We've got incarceration.
Language.
Is a man who drinks himself, smokes himself senseless, not just suffering from loss and grief, but participating in it, because he's actually stepping out of his community as well. So he's causing loss and grief for other people. So, then we've got a blue pen there. On the inside of this man, throw some words at me. So tell me what's going on for a man, for an Aboriginal man, who is suffering grief due to a loss. Now, I'm not going to name the loss, but what is going on inside this man?
Hurt.
I need two hands. Where's the other colour?
All right.
Hurt. What else we got in there?
Misunderstanding.
Misunderstood? So he's done there? Yep. Just chuck some words. Throw some words. Come on. What else is going on?
Shame.
Anger.
Yeah,
shame. Who's writing down anger?
Yep.
You got the long word there, mate.
Yeah.
You just named misunderstood.
Yeah.
More. What else is going on with this guy?
Doubt.
D-O-U-B-T, for those who doubt the spelling.
Overwhelmed.
Confused.
Confused. Come on, what word? Loss.
Sadness.
Loss, sadness.
Lonely.
Yeah, they come.
What was that one?
Lonely.
Come on, we don't get his legs yet.
Yeah.
But you'd be bottled up or blocked.
Bottled up. Yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah. Can't think of a better way to say that, so I think...
That'll do.
Isolated.
Lonely.
Lonely, got it?
No. I've got it there.
Oh. Frustrated. Frustrated.
Big time. Capital.
Go on, what else is in there?
It would be sorrow in there, wouldn't it?
Sorrow. Not sadness, but sorrow. Inadequate. Worthless.
Depression.
Put it down.
Yep.
Didn't even arms to go yet.
Fear.
Fear, scared.
Tension.
Tension. Tension mounts and rides away.
Culture.
Culture.
Lack of.
When you get judged, Dozer?
Yeah. Yeah, he feels judged, doesn't he? Wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Well, no, I would.
And then it can turn in and you can become self-loathing from that?
Yeah.
So try and think of the word for it. That's all self-loathing,
yeah.
Whew.
There's something about loss of manhood or, you know, feeling less, you know, maybe that there's... We're talking about the roles, you know, that you're not, you know, that you don't have, you've lost that role that you may have, that
what is emasculated?
200 years ago, is it?
Emasculated, is that the word?
Is that the word?
Yeah. I don't know, I've just heard it recently, I thought that might fit there.
Is that the lost the feeling of man?
Yeah, that'll do. Five words, lost the feeling of man.
Does that stand for impotent?
Yes, you've got it.
Yeah, impotence down there.
Anything else?
Insensitivity.
Insensitivity, yes.
Identity.
You're getting the big words, bro.
Yeah.
I think in the end, sometimes you can just feel numb.
That's true. Yeah.
Does spirituality come in there as well?
Big time.
You're labeled?
Spirituality.
Yeah. Big time. Well, they're labeled.
Labeled.
He feels labeled.
Yeah.
Spirituality's in there.
weak, feeling weak, not
weak.
Yeah. Okay, take a seat for a second, gentlemen. We'll get you back in a second. I don't try not to take too much about whether we fill the arms or the legs. Sometimes I think, why didn't they fill the head, you know? It's still got nothing going on in his head.
Pretty. There's too much in there to write, though. Too much goes in the head to write.
Okay. Is this just a black fella?
No. Absolutely not.
Is this maybe anyone who's suffering? Group? What, is there anything in there particular we can put in with culture?
Well, it was country and there's
cultural identity. Is it
homeless?
Homeless.
I don't mean homeless as
that feeling of homeless, not wanted or not neat, not done.
Is it expectations?
Sorry?
Expectation.
Expectation?
Yeah. You're expected to do this because it's your role.
Or,
So is that pressure?
Huh?
Is that pressure?
It can be pressure. Like when you've got a couple of things in there and something's happening, it's your role to do that. You're expected, especially as a couple of things come together, more westernized things come in, and then you push it back in the culture, and then you must do that this year.
I trained 99 people over the last couple of sessions. And one thing that this topic does do is it generates discussion. And you've just opened it up there, and you just asked them a question because you're curious. And we have that all the time about this. It's not just about the traditional roles of dads that people are curious about. People are curious about how dads are feeling at the moment, I think, too, what's really going on.
When you look at cultural, and I'm a gavar, so I'm guided by others, but there's a special kind of racism that comes to the black man. That makes you feel differently, I think. If you've got someone who's stolen your land and your population's fighting for its very survival, 2.5% from 100%, there's a special kind of loss that I don't think I can completely get. So I think there are some culturally specific components, but I'm just putting them out there for my comrades in the room. That would be my sense of what's culturally specific.
Yep.
And that's that generational, transgenerational trauma and loss. That I think there's a difference in how it manifests, there's a difference in how it gets passed on, and there's culturally specific. That's not just for Indigenous or Aboriginal Australians, but there's something about passing that on, that loss.
And what are they passing on? Yeah, they're passing on. They're passing on that.
It's a hopelessness.
But it's a hopelessness.
It's a connection.
Yeah.
Well, that with the homelessness, it's not belonging. Yeah. I think it means not belonging, because that's probably the big factor. It's a sense of belonging that we all need to have.
But isn't it driven from such a strong an injustice that in a community dominated by a Western concept of the individual, the injustice of stealing the land, which is the generational loss, and then that compounds. And then the white culture judges you must take individual responsibility for your actions, ignoring the structural injustice of the loss and stop the steal that's began it all. And then we blame the individual. So you're dodgy because you drink, because you this, you that, without sort of going, hang on there. That's the intergenerational trauma that passes through generation to generation. It's driven from a great wrong.
It sounds like the old expression, a cliche expression, real men don't cry. Because men bottle up their emotions and get, absolutely f***ed up.
Let's talk about f***ed up in a minute, because we're going to have a look at that.
That was part one of the Hey Dad workshop we recorded at the National Men's Health Conference in Newcastle recently. We'll go to a short break, so don't go away.
Even if it's been 3 years,
it a crime to be a man?
Dad's on the air, and this is Bill Cable, in my last show for the year. So I wanted to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and I look forward to seeing you, or at least talking to you, in 2010. Now, we have a special guest who wants to have a quick word.
Oh, get on you, Bill.
It's Germaine Diarrhea.
Yes, Germaine Diarrhea here. Just wanting to say to all your faithful Dad's on the Air listeners, and especially that lovable rogue crew of eunuchs that do Dad's on the Air, a Merry Christmas, ass, and a Happy New Year. See you next time, darlings. I'm off to lunch now. I think I'm going to have the Berlusconi today. Bye-bye.
Just before we go, remember the program is available on the web on www.dadsontheair.net. Next up, we've got Country On with Country Bob.
We're Dads on the Air, we're here 'cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare.